start the show. Eagle soar and oil flow. You didn't decide what you chose. We will pay back what they owe. Crime depends from who you stole. We cheer for the villains though. Hustling, bustling, hitting low. Motion is perpetual. We call drill to give and go. All you reap is what you sow. No, where are the controls? Mass of individuals consuming as ritual. You ain't hear them say ride slow. Dude, don't let them play us.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jeff Connaughton, who is the author of the new book, The Payoff, Why Wall Street Always Wins. He previously worked for 4 years as an investment banker, first at Smith Barney and then at E.F. Hutton. Additionally, he served as special assistant to the counsel to the president in the Clinton White House, and then as special assistant to then-chairman Joseph Biden of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and later as chief of staff for Senator Ted Kaufman. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeff Connaughton.
Thank you so much, Ian.
And your book is quite a bombshell. You've worked both sides of the street, if you will, both as a lobbyist, as a banker, and as an aide to both Senator Biden and his successor, Senator Ted Kaufman. Particularly, the book deals with that particular period where the senator is trying to reform Wall Street. And it's a kind of blow-by-blow, and it is really an invaluable insight into why it is that we've had, in effect, no justice in the sense that Wall Street took the global economy to the brink of extinction back in 2008. Nobody's gone to jail, and the middle class are still paying for it. So it's a monstrous crime that has still gone unpunished.
Yes, and I mean, I'm not trying to hold myself out as a paragon of virtue. As you said, I mean, I spent 12 years in Washington as a corporate lobbyist myself. I mean, many people who go to Washington do both government service, and then you find yourself sort of drawn into, well, how am I going to make a living? And whether it's at a law firm or a public relations firm or a lobbying firm, you're pretty much working for corporate America or Wall Street most of the time. But when the financial crisis hit, I mean, to me, that was a seismic event. I mean, it nearly brought the country to its knees. I mean, it was obvious that millions of people were suffering. So when Ted Kaufman, who I had known for 20 years, was appointed to take Joe Biden's seat in the Senate and asked me to be his chief of staff, I went in back into government, you know, determined with Ted to really do something about Wall Street power and reform. And what was shocking to me, and I suppose, you know, I of all people should have known since I had gone along with, you know, a good bit of what's wrong with Washington, what was shocking to me was how poorly the system performed both before the financial crisis leading to the disaster and in responding to the financial crisis. And the book is really me trying to provide an inside-the-room account of what Ted tried hard to do for 2 years and failed on all fronts.
And specifically what Senator Ted Kaufman and you as his chief of staff were trying to do was to hold Wall Street executives accountable.
Our initial thought was, you know, while it was a gigantic crisis with thousands of transactions, players and firms and you know, financial instruments involved, somewhere in all of that there might have been lawbreaking. And therefore, the Justice Department needed to be both organized, dedicated, and well-resourced to target any financial fraud that might have occurred during the crisis. And the role of Congress is really limited. I mean, all we can't really ask about the specifics of any case. All we can do is urge the Justice Department to be strategic, to be targeted, to be funded, to dedicate itself. And so Ted first worked on legislation called the Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act with Senators Leahy and Grassley, Grassley, a Republican of Iowa, which passed the Congress, authorized an additional $165 million for the Justice Department and FBI to target high-level securities fraud that might have occurred on Wall Street. And when no cases began to arise, Ted decided to ask Chairman Leahy if he could chair oversight hearings of the Justice Department and FBI. And essentially what we found in the course of our dealings with the Justice Department was that it really needed a timely all-in approach. And instead, Central Justice, frankly, just did did not organize itself to add to what was already taking place at the local U.S. Attorney's Office. There was no sort of muscular, additional, centralized approach like, you know, the Bush Justice Department did with Enron. And so that failure, you know, the New York Times just editorialized about it yesterday. I mean, here we are 4 years later, the statutes of limitations have passed, and not one single executive on Wall Street was even indicted, you know, or tried to be accused of financial fraud. And I just, I feel like it was a failure of the Justice Department leadership. And, you know, we saw it as it was unfolding 2 years ago in the Senate.
Again, I'm speaking with Jeff Connaughton, the author of the new book, The Payoff, Why Wall Street Always Wins. He previously worked for 4 years as an investment banker, first at Smith Barney and then at EF Hutton. And additionally, he served as a special assistant to the counsel to the president in the Clinton White House, and then a special assistant to then Chairman Joseph Biden of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and later as chief of staff for Senator Ted Kaufman. And the book chronicles the long struggle by both Jeff Connaughton and Senator Kaufman to hold Wall Street accountable for securities fraud, to stop stock manipulation by high-frequency traders, and to break up the too-big-to-fail mega banks. And you know, sometime back, I recall, Jeff, 60 Minutes did a pretty scathing piece on why it is, the very questions you're asking, why is it that the Justice Department haven't brought anybody to justice for what happened on Wall Street in 2008? And they said that they were working on it. One of the things that the book reveals is that both the reluctance of the White House to do anything, the Justice Department's torpor, but the SEC, who are supposed to be in charge of, they're supposed to be the cops on the beat. Robert Kazumi, the director of SEC's Enforcement Division, when asked about federal judges rebuking the SEC for levying paltry fines, said to your boss, Senator Kaufman, "I'm not losing any sleep over it." What explains that?
Well, I think, you know, it appears that the Justice Department at some point decided that they were not going to be pursuing criminal charges against anyone on Wall Street, and that they were going to be leaving it to the Securities and Exchange Commission to pursue only civil actions against banks. And that's because in a criminal action, the Justice Department would have to prove every element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury, whereas in a civil action, it's a much lower standard, only a preponderance of the evidence. But what the SEC did was they didn't target individuals. I mean, there seemed to be this concern at the Justice Department and the SEC that the financial system was still so fragile that if they targeted firms on Wall Street with any type of criminal action, that would only make matters worse. But that was a false choice. I mean, prosecutors can single out individuals, both for criminal actions and for civil actions by the SEC. But instead, the SEC only reached settlements with most of the major banks for, you know, relatively paltry fines, even though they're in the hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases. These banks are absolutely gigantic, you know, which make billions of dollars in profits a year. And so that was only the semblance of accountability of law. I mean, there was no individuals held to account, and federal judges were indeed rebuking the SEC for failing to achieve the deterrence that the facts demand. And when we asked Mr. Kazumi about it, he said he wasn't losing any sleep over it. Now, to his point, I mean, he did win the appeal. I mean, there was a judge who actually threw out a settlement against one of the banks as being inadequate. And on appeal in the Second Circuit, the higher court said, well, the SEC can reach settlements at small amounts, and it's really not the role of judges to sort of second guess the SEC's determination of when they're going to go to trial versus when they're going to settle for a fine. But the bottom line is that no one went to jail. No individuals faced sanctions. The big banks basically went through a toll booth by paying relatively paltry fines. And we're left with an America that has absolutely no confidence in our justice system and whether or not powerful people on Wall Street, individuals especially, will ever be held to account for any lawbreaking. And that's just an unacceptable situation, and one that, you know, frustrated and angered me so much that I decided to leave Washington and write a book about it, frankly.
Well, we're grateful that you have, Jeff Connaughton, because this really is a book that reveals the struggle to bring justice and why the powers in Washington were able to fight back. And it also, I think, indicates the broader struggles that we as a society are undergoing, where the extent to which our economy has become a plutonomy and the extent to which politics have been captured by an oligarchy. And that seems to be implicit here in the sense that these mega banks have so much political clout. They've essentially gone to war against the Dodd-Frank bill, and they're still holding that up. As you mentioned, the New York Times mentioned that they basically, the Justice Department, are given up on going after Goldman Sachs. And is this really, is that the bottom line, the capture of our politicians, particularly on the Republican side, but also on the Democratic side?
Yes. I mean, this is not a new problem. I mean, Woodrow Wilson said in 1913 that when government makes decisions that affect big business, isn't it natural that big business would want to get close to and capture big business? Wilson said, you know, isn't it natural? It's already happened. You know, I mean, so it's regulatory capture has long been a problem. But during the course of my 2 decades in Washington and my 12 years as a lobbyist, the amount of money that corporate America spends in Washington tripled. And it's really become the case now that whoever in government reaches a level of substantial responsibility in the public sector can cash in a big way in the private sector immediately upon leaving office. I did it myself. I mean, no one's ever heard of me. I mean, I never registered on the power scale in any kind of meaningful way. I mean, I did work briefly in the Clinton White House. I did work for Senator Biden. But I ended up making a lot of money over the course of my career because there's so much money to be made in Washington now. And so that skews outcomes. I mean, that, you know, there are a lot of honorable people. You know, there are a lot of ethical people in Washington who are working hard every day trying to do the right thing by the American people. But the big picture is the town is floating in corporate money. And the typical career path is too much like mine, you know. And, you know, people can accuse me of hypocrisy, but my defense is, I mean, for me, the financial crisis was a shock the conscience event. I mean, it really was something unlike we've ever seen in our lifetimes. And it had a devastating impact on people. And to go back into government then and see how one-sided political power has become and making it virtually impossible to get, you know, the kind of response to the financial system that we should have had, it was very disillusioning for me and should be for all Americans. We don't have a two-party political system that works here. I mean, we don't have Republicans criticizing the Obama Justice Department for failing to go hard enough after Wall Street because the Republican Party is raising money in buckets from Wall Street just like the Democrats are. I mean, one of the things that was unique about Ted Kaufman was he was appointed to the seat, and he said immediately that he wasn't going to run in a special election 2 years later. So he didn't have to raise money to become a senator or to stay in the Senate. He had a 2-year term where he decided, I'm just going to do what I think is right. And I was different from most staffers because I was older, and I had already gone through the revolving door twice, and I had already made quite a bit of money, so I didn't care about where my next job was coming from. And, you know, I think that was one of the reasons why the Kaufman tale is worth reading. As Simon Johnson wrote yesterday or over the weekend in Huffington Post, I mean, it's sort of an indication of what we might get if we could somehow get the influence of money out of politics.
Well, Jeff Connaughton, your book really shows us how much the public have ponied up and what ingrates Wall Street are. It points out, for example, that Citigroup and Bank of America, which the two of the largest financial mega banks, they would have failed in 2008 but for government bailouts. But you get the impression that not only are the Wall Street titans not grateful, they're kind of indignant that people don't respect them more. I just find it extraordinary. What do they think they're doing? Don't they see the big picture of how the financialization of the economy is a one-way street? It's about extracting wealth, not creating wealth. And it's almost like the country's eating its economic seed corn.
Right. I mean, one of Ted's favorite sayings was never underestimate the ability of the human mind to rationalize its actions. I mean, these mega banks have become so gigantic and so powerful that they defend their existence as, oh, we need to be this big to compete globally, to provide the kinds of services that U.S. corporate clients need. But that's just not true. I mean, it's demonstrably not true. Alan Greenspan, when he was Federal Reserve Chairman, said there are no economies of scale to banks larger than $100 billion in assets. Today we have mega banks that have assets between $2 trillion and $4 trillion. I mean, the sum total of the assets of the six largest banks in the United States is equal to two-thirds of the United States' gross domestic product. So if one of those banks fails, regardless of what was in Dodd-Frank, we're going to be in another situation where we're either going to have to bail them out because by failing they would wreak systemic havoc and take down, you know, the rest of the financial sector and the country with it, you know, or we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to pony up money to keep them afloat. And there's just no justification for not breaking them up. Yet when Ted and Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio offered an amendment to Dodd-Frank to put limits on the size of these banks, on the leverage that they can use, on the liabilities that they roll over every night to finance themselves, it was defeated in the Senate primarily because of the opposition of the Obama Treasury Department. I mean, the technocrats at the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department were saying to Congress, no, don't write any hard lines in statute. We can deal with this at the international level by determining capital requirements for banks with our counterparts in other countries, and we will increase the capital requirements for these banks. And Ted would say, well, there's just one problem. I mean, what happens if, you know, 2 years, 6 years, 10 years from now, a president gets elected who doesn't believe in regulation, you know, who appoints regulators just like the ones who failed us in the run-up to the crisis? I mean, the Greenspan-era regulators were free market ideologues who didn't believe that regulation was necessary. I mean, without putting hard lines into the statute, without breaking up these banks by statutory lines, you know, you don't get the kind of change we need. I mean, just today in the Financial Times, Nicholas Brady, who was the Republican Treasury Secretary under George Bush the First, wrote that this regulation that Dodd-Frank has produced is so complicated, what we really need are simple lines, like leverage requirements. Well, that was what the Brown-Kaufman Amendment was. You know, so we still have this debate raging in this country about too big to fail. Dodd-Frank didn't end the debate. The big banks are still out there. There's still a sort of sword of Damocles hanging over the U.S. economy. And until enough Americans sort of wake up, get involved, enough non-financial business people wake up and understand that financial stability is what we need in this country for the economy to thrive, then we're not going to get the kind of change that we need to rein in Wall Street excess.
Well, just in closing, Jeff Connaughton, given that our government is largely being captured by Wall Street and by Wall Street's money, and that after this extraordinary act of reckless incompetence where they basically took the global economy to the brink and then were subsequently rewarded by the taxpayer and have ever since gotten even bigger and more arrogant. And so I guess my question would be, you know, if we're living in the era of, you know, instead of the era of Thomas Edison and Henry Ford, we're now in the era of Jamie Dimon and John Paulson. What other power centers are there in the country that if our government has failed us, could corporate America step up? Because I noticed over the weekend, David Gregory was hosting a group of CEOs, Bob Wright, Lou Gerstner, former head of IBM, and Jack Welch, former head of General Electric, They were all very critical of Wall Street. IBM CEO Gerstner saying that a lot of people in the business community are totally fed up with what's going on in the financial services industry. And he went on to say, you know, that these golden parachutes, so many of these idiot CEOs, as I'm quoting him, get when they get fired is completely unconscionable. So it sounds like there's a little bit of awakening, at least in corporate America. So, you know, short of educating the public, as you just suggested, and the public, of course, are being bamboozled by political ads at the moment, so I wouldn't count on that. What would be the countervailing power centers that could be a check and balance against the growing power of Wall Street?
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's going to take non-financial corporate America waking up and realizing that it has a stake here. It takes power to beat power in Washington. I mean, there was one amendment where the retailers across America, Walmart, Home Depot, opposed the credit card banks for the swipe fees that they charge at the retail counter. And that amendment passed. It surprised everyone. But you had a coalition of big business opposing Wall Street credit card banks, and the big business powers won. I mean, I think it takes a combination of citizens. I mean, if the Occupy movement, if the Tea Party movement realized that they shared common ground in fighting crony capitalism, there's absolutely no reason why the Tea Party should be in favor of Wall Street power. I mean, they wanted to bring change to Washington, but they didn't bring it in a way that I was hoping, you know, it would happen. I mean, you know, it's going to take, you know, a decade, and I see it like a game of Rover, Red Rover. I do think there are people crossing over, you know, some of the executives you just mentioned. Sandy Weil, who put together Citigroup, you know, shocked Wall Street just 2 weeks ago by calling for the reinstatement of the Glass-Steagall Act, which, you know, it was only the repeal of Glass-Steagall that allowed him to put together Citigroup in the first place. So I do think people are going to change their views and positions, and at some point, it might take a decade, it might take a Teddy Roosevelt or an FDR or somebody to lead the reform movement, but at some point, a critical mass will be reached and will get change. At least that's what we all have to hope for and try for.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Jeff Connaughton.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Jeff Connaughton, who's the author of The Payoff, Why Wall Street Always Wins. He previously worked for 4 years as an investment banker, first at Smith Barney and then at E.F. Hutton. Additionally, he served as a special assistant to the counsel to the president in the Clinton White House and then as special assistant to then-chairman Joseph Biden of the Senate Judiciary Committee and later as chief of staff for Senator Ted Kaufman. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producers Michelle Manos and Brooke Peterson. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. The headline.